This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Trials of Apollo, The Hidden Oracle, by Rick Riordan. Read for you by Robbie Damon. Chapter 1. Hoodlums punch my face. I would smite them if I could. Mortality blows. My name is Apollo. I used to be a god. In my 4,612 years, I have done many things. I inflicted a plague on the Greeks who besieged Troy. I blessed Babe Ruth with 3 home runs in Game 4 of the 1926 World Series. I visited my wrath upon Britney Spears at the 2007 MTV Video Music Awards. But in all my immortal life, I never before crash-landed in a dumpster. I'm not even sure how it happened. I simply woke up falling. Skyscrapers spiraled in and out of view, flames streamed off my body. I tried to fly. I tried to change into a cloud or teleport across the world, or do 100 other things that should have been easy for me, but I just kept falling. I plunged into a narrow canyon between 2 buildings and bam. Is anything sadder than the sound of a god hitting a pile of garbage bags? I lay groaning and aching in the open dumpster. My nostrils burned with the stench of rancid bologna and used diapers. My ribs felt broken, though that shouldn't have been possible. My mind stewed in confusion, but one memory floated to the surface. The voice of my father, Zeus. Your fault. Your punishment. I realized what had happened to me, and I sobbed in despair. Even for a god of poetry such as myself, it is difficult to describe how I felt. How could you, a mere mortal, possibly understand? Imagine being stripped of your clothes, then blasted with a fire hose in front of a laughing crowd. Imagine the ice-cold water filling your mouth and lungs, the pressure bruising your skin, turning your joints to putty. Imagine feeling helpless, ashamed, completely vulnerable. Publicly and brutally stripped of everything that makes you, you. My humiliation was worse than that. Your fault. Zeus's voice rang in my head. No! I cried miserably. No, it wasn't! Please! Nobody answered. On either side of me, rusty fire escapes zigzagged up brick walls. Above, the winter sky was gray and unforgiving. I tried to remember the details of my sentencing. Had my father told me how long this punishment would last? What was I supposed to do to regain his favor? My memory was too fuzzy. I could barely recall what Zeus looked like, much less why he'd decided to toss me to Earth. There'd been a war with the giants, I thought. The gods had been caught off guard, embarrassed, almost defeated. The only thing I knew for certain, my punishment was unfair. Zeus needed someone to blame, so of course he'd picked the handsomest, most talented, most popular god in the pantheon. Me. I lay in the garbage, staring at the label inside the dumpster lid. For pickup, call 1-555-STENCHY. Zeus will reconsider, I told myself. He's just trying to scare me. Any moment he will yank me back to Olympus and let me off with a warning. Yes. My voice sounded hollow and desperate. Yes, that's it. I tried to move. I wanted to be on my feet when Zeus came to apologize. My ribs throbbed. My stomach clenched. I clawed the rim of the dumpster and managed to drag myself over the side. I toppled out and landed on my shoulder, which made a cracking sound against the asphalt. I whimpered through the pain. Stand up. Stand up. Getting to my feet was not easy. My head spun. I almost passed out from the effort. I stood in a dead-end alley, About 50 feet away, the only exit opened onto a street with grimy storefronts for a bail bondsman's office and a pawn shop. I was somewhere on the west side of Manhattan, I guessed, or perhaps Crown Heights in Brooklyn. Zeus must have been really angry with me. I inspected my new body. I appeared to be a teenaged Caucasian male, clad in sneakers, blue jeans, and a green polo shirt. How utterly drab. I felt sick, weak, and so, so human. I will never understand how you mortals tolerate it. You live your entire life trapped in a sack of meat, unable to enjoy simple pleasures like changing into a hummingbird or dissolving into pure light. And now, heavens help me, I was one of you. Just another meat sack. I fumbled through my pants pockets, hoping I still had the keys to my sun chariot. No such luck. I found a cheap nylon wallet containing $100 in American currency, lunch money for my first day as a mortal, perhaps, along with a New York State junior driver's license, featuring a photo of a dorky, curly-haired teen, who could not possibly be me, with the name Lester Papadopoulos. The cruelty of Zeus knew no bounds. I peered into the dumpster, hoping my bow, quiver, and lyre might have fallen to earth with me. I would have settled for my harmonica. There was nothing. I took a deep breath. Cheer up, I told myself. I must have retained some of my godly abilities. Matters could be worse. A raspy voice called, "Hey, Cade! Take a look at this loser!" Blocking the alley's exit were two young men. One squat and platinum blonde, the other tall and redheaded. Both wore oversized hoodies and baggy pants. Serpentine tattoo designs covered their necks. All they were missing were the words, "I'm a thug," printed in large letters across their foreheads. The redhead zeroed in on the wallet in my hand. "Now be nice, Mikey. This guy looks friendly enough." He grinned and pulled a hunting knife from his belt. "In fact, I bet he wants to give us all his money." I blame my disorientation for what happened next. I knew my immortality had been stripped away, but I still considered myself the mighty Apollo. One cannot change one's way of thinking as easily as one might, say, turn into a snow leopard. Also, on previous occasions, when Zeus had punished me by making me mortal, yes, it had happened twice before, I had retained massive strength and at least some of my godly powers. I assumed the same would be true now. I was not going to allow two young mortal ruffians to take Lester Papadopoulos's wallet. I stood up straight, hoping Cade and Mikey would be intimidated by my regal bearing and divine beauty. Surely those qualities could not be taken from me, no matter what my driver's license photo looked like. I ignored the warm dumpster juice trickling down my neck. "I am Apollo," I announced. "You mortals have three choices. Offer me tribute, flee, or be destroyed." I wanted my words to echo through the alley, shake the towers of New York, and cause the skies to rain smoking ruin. None of that happened. On the word destroyed, my voice squeaked. The redhead Cade grinned even wider. I thought how amusing it would be if I could make the snake tattoos around his neck come alive and strangle him to death. "What do you think, Mikey?" he asked his friend. "Should we give this guy tribute?" Mikey scowled. With his bristly blonde hair, his cruel small eyes, and his thick frame, he reminded me of the monstrous sow that terrorized the village of Chromion back in the good old days. "Not feeling the tribute, Cade?" His voice sounded like he'd been eating lit cigarettes. "What were the other options?" "Fleeing?" said Cade. "Nah," said Mikey. "Being destroyed?" Mikey snorted. "How about we destroy him instead?" Cade flipped his knife and caught it by the handle.
I can live with that. After you.
I slipped the wallet into my back pocket. I raised my fists. I did not like the idea of flattening mortals into flesh waffles, but I was sure I could do it. Even in my weakened state, I would be far stronger than any human.
I warned you, I said. My powers are far beyond your comprehension.
Mikey cracked his knuckles.
Uh-huh.
He lumbered forward. As soon as he was in range, I struck. I put all my wrath into that punch. It should have been enough to vaporize Mikey and leave a thug-shaped impression on the asphalt. Instead, he ducked, which I found quite annoying. I stumbled forward. I have to say that when Prometheus fashioned you humans out of clay, he did a shoddy job. Mortal legs are clumsy. I tried to compensate, drawing upon my boundless reserves of agility, but Mikey kicked me in the back. I fell on my divine face. My nostrils inflated like airbags, my ears popped. The taste of copper filled my mouth. I rolled over, groaning, and found the two blurry thugs staring down at me.
Mikey, said Cade, are you comprehending this guy's power?
Nah, said Mikey, I'm not comprehending it.
Fools, I croaked, I will destroy you.
Yeah, sure, Cade tossed away his knife. But first I think we'll stomp you.
Cade raised his boot over my face, and the world went black. Chapter 2. A Girl from Nowhere completes my embarrassment. Stupid bananas. I had not been stumped so badly since my guitar contest against Chuck Berry in 1957. As Cade and Mikey kicked me, I curled into a ball, trying to protect my ribs and head. The pain was intolerable. I retched and shuddered. I blacked out and came to, my vision swimming with red splotches. When my attackers got tired of kicking me, they hit me over the head with a bag of garbage, which burst and covered me in coffee grounds and moldy fruit peels. At last, they stepped away, breathing heavily. Rough hands patted me down and took my wallet.
Looky here, said Cade. Some cash and an ID for Lester Papadopoulos.
Mikey laughed.
Lester? That's even worse than Apollo.
I touched my nose, which felt roughly the size and texture of a waterbed mattress. My fingers came away glistening red.
Blood, I muttered. That's not possible.
It's very possible, Lester.
Cade crouched next to me.
And there might be more blood in your near future. You want to explain why you don't have a credit card or a phone? I'd hate to think I did all that stomping for just $100.
I stared at the blood on my fingertips. I was a god. I did not have blood. Even when I'd been turned mortal before, golden ichor still ran through my veins. I had never before been so converted. It must be a mistake. A trick. Something. I tried to sit up. My hand hit a banana peel and I fell again. My attackers howled in delight.
I love this guy, Mikey said.
Yeah, but the boss told us he'd be loaded, Cade complained.
Boss, I muttered. Boss?
That's right, Lester.
Cade flicked a finger against the side of my head.
Go to that alley, the boss told us. Easy score.
He said we should rough you up, take whatever you had.
But this?
He waved the cash under my nose.
This isn't much of a payday.
Despite my predicament, I felt a surge of hopefulness. If these thugs had been sent here to find me, Their boss must be a god. No mortal could have known I would fall to earth at this spot. Perhaps Cade and Mikey were not human either. Perhaps they were cleverly disguised monsters or spirits. At least that would explain why they had beaten me so easily.
Who is your boss?
I struggled to my feet, coffee grounds dribbling from my shoulders. My dizziness made me feel as if I were flying too close to the fumes of primordial chaos, but I refused to be humbled.
Did Zeus send you? Or perhaps Ares? I demand an audience.
Mikey and Cade looked at each other as if to say, "Can you believe this guy?" Cade picked up his knife.
"You don't take a hint, do you, Lester?"
Mikey pulled off his belt, a length of bike chain, and wrapped it around his fist. I decided to sing them into submission. They may have resisted my fists, but no mortal could resist my golden voice. I was trying to decide between You Send Me and an original composition, I'm Your Poetry God, Baby, when a voice yelled,
"Hey!"
The hooligans turned. Above us, on the second-story fire escape landing, stood a girl of about 12.
"Leave him alone,"
she ordered. My first thought was that Artemis had come to my aid. My sister often appeared as a 12-year-old girl, for reasons I'd never fully understood. But something told me this was not she. The girl on the fire escape did not exactly inspire fear. She was small and pudgy, with dark hair chopped in a messy pageboy style, and black cat-eye glasses with rhinestones glittering in the corners. Despite the cold, she wore no coat. Her outfit looked like it had been picked by a kindergartner. Red sneakers, yellow tights, and a green tank dress. Perhaps she was on her way to a costume party, dressed as a traffic light. Still, there was something fierce in her expression. She had the same obstinate scowl my old girlfriend Cyrene used to get whenever she wrestled lions. Mikey and Cade did not seem impressed.
"Get lost, kid," Mikey told her.
The girl stamped her foot, causing the fire escape to shudder.
"My alley, my rules."
Her bossy nasal voice made her sound like she was chiding a playmate in a game of make-believe.
"Whatever that loser has is mine, including his money."
"Why is everyone calling me a loser?" I asked weakly.
The comment seemed unfair, even if I was beat up and covered in garbage. But no one paid me any attention. Cade glared at the girl. The red from his hair seemed to be seeping into his face.
"You've got to be kidding me. Beat it, you brat."
He picked up a rotten apple and threw it. The girl didn't flinch. The fruit landed at her feet and rolled harmlessly to a stop.
"You want to play with food?"
The girl wiped her nose.
"Okay."
I didn't see her kick the apple, but it came flying back with deadly accuracy and hit Cade in the nose. He collapsed on his rump. Mikey snarled. He marched toward the fire escape ladder, but a banana peel seemed to slither directly into his path. He slipped and fell hard.
"Ow!"
I backed away from the fallen thugs. I wondered if I should make a run for it, but I could barely hobble. I also did not want to be assaulted with old fruit. The girl climbed over the railing. She dropped to the ground with surprising nimbleness and grabbed a sack of garbage from the dumpster.
"Stop!"
Kate did a sort of scuttling crab walk to get away from the girl.
"Let's talk about this."
Mikey groaned and rolled onto his back. The girl pouted. Her lips were chapped. She had wispy black fuzz at the corners of her mouth.
"I don't like you guys," she said. "You should go."
"Yeah,"
Cade said.
"Sure, just..."
He reached for the money scattered among the coffee grounds. The girl swung her garbage bag. In mid-arc, the plastic exploded, disgorging an impossible number of rotten bananas. They knocked Cade flat. Mikey was plastered with so many peels he looked like he was being attacked by a carnivorous starfish.
"Leave my alley," the girl said. "Now."
In the dumpster, more trash bags burst like popcorn kernels, showering Cade and Mikey with radishes, potato peelings, and other compost material. Miraculously, none of it got on me. Despite their injuries, the two thugs scrambled to their feet and ran away screaming. I turned toward my pint-sized savior. I was no stranger to dangerous women. My sister could rain down arrows of death. My stepmother, Hira, regularly drove mortals mad so that they would hack each other to pieces. But this garbage-wielding 12-year-old made me nervous. "Thank you," I ventured. The girl crossed her arms. On her middle fingers, she wore matching gold rings with crescent signets. Her eyes glinted darkly like a crow's. I can make that comparison because I invented crows.
"Don't thank me," she said. "You're still in my alley."
She walked a full circle around me, scrutinizing my appearance as if I were a prize cow. I can also make that comparison because I used to collect prize cows.
"You're the god Apollo?"
She sounded less than awestruck. She also didn't seem fazed by the idea of gods walking among mortals.
"You were listening then,"
she nodded.
"You don't look like a god."
"I'm not at my best," I admitted. "My father Zeus has exiled me from Olympus. And who are you?" She smelled faintly of apple pie, which was surprising since she looked so grubby. Part of me wanted to find a fresh towel, clean her face, and give her money for a hot meal. Part of me wanted to fend her off with a chair in case she decided to bite me. She reminded me of the strays my sister was always adopting. Dogs, panthers, homeless maidens, small dragons.
"Name is Meg," she said.
"Short for Megara or Margaret?"
"Margaret, but don't ever call me Margaret."
"And are you a demigod, Meg?" She pushed up her glasses.
"Why would you think that?"
Again, she didn't seem surprised by the question. I sensed she had heard the term demigod before. "Well," I said, "you obviously have some power. You chased off those hooligans with rotten fruit. Perhaps you have banana kinesis? Or you can control garbage?" "I once knew a Roman goddess, Cloacina, who presided over the city's sewer system. Perhaps you're related." Meg pouted. I got the impression I might have said something wrong, though I couldn't imagine what.
"I think I'll just take your money," Meg said.
"Go on. Get out of here."
"No, wait."
Desperation crept into my voice. "Please, I may need a bit of assistance." I felt ridiculous, of course. Me, the god of prophecy, plague, archery, healing, music, and several other things I couldn't remember at the moment, asking a colorfully dressed street urchin for help. But I had no one else. If this child chose to take my money and kick me into the cruel winter streets, I didn't think I could stop her.
"Say I believe you."
Meg's voice took on a sing-song tone, as if she were about to announce the rules of the game. "I'll be the princess, and you'll be the scullery maid."
"Say I decide to help. What then?"
Good question, I thought. We are in Manhattan?
Mm-hmm.
She twirled and did a playful skip kick.
"Hell's Kitchen."
It seemed wrong for a child to say Hell's Kitchen. Then again, it seemed wrong for a child to live in an alley and have garbage fights with thugs. I considered walking to the Empire State Building. That was the modern gateway to Mount Olympus. But I doubted the guards would let me up to the secret 600th floor. Zeus would not make it so easy.
Perhaps I could find my old friend Chiron, the centaur. He had a training camp on Long Island.
He could offer me shelter and guidance. But that would be a dangerous journey. A defenseless god makes for a juicy target. Any monster along the way would cheerfully disembowel me. Jealous spirits and minor gods might also welcome the opportunity. Then there was Cade and Mikey's mysterious boss. I had no idea who he was, or whether he had other, worse minions to send against me. Even if I made it to Long Island, my new mortal eyes might not be able to find Chiron's camp in its magically camouflaged valley. I needed a guide to get me there. Someone experienced and close by. I have an idea. I stood as straight as my injuries allowed. It wasn't easy to look confident with the bloody nose and coffee grounds dripping off my clothes. I know someone who might help. He lives on the Upper East Side. Take me to him, and I shall reward you. Meg made a sound between a sneeze and a laugh.
Reward me with what?
She danced around, plucking $20 bills from the trash.
I'm already taking all your money.
Hey! She tossed me my wallet, now empty except for Lester Papadopoulos's junior driver's license. Meg sang,
I've got your money, I've got your money.
I stifled a growl. Listen, child, I won't be mortal forever. Someday I will become a god again. Then I will reward those who helped me, and punish those who didn't. She put her hands on her hips.
How do you know what will happen? Have you ever been mortal before?
Yes, actually, twice. Both times my punishment only lasted a few years at most.
Oh yeah? And how did you get back to being all gaudy or whatever?
Gaudy is not a word, I pointed out. Though my poetic sensibilities were already thinking of ways I might use it. Usually Zeus requires me to work as a slave for some important demigod. This fellow uptown I mentioned, for instance, he'd be perfect. I do whatever tasks my new master requires for a few years. As long as I behave, I am allowed back to Olympus. Right now, I just have to recover my strength and figure out...
How do you know for sure which demigod?
I blinked. What?
Which demigod you're supposed to serve, dummy?
Well, it's usually obvious. I just sort of run into them. That's why I want to get to the Upper East Side. My new master will claim my service and...
I'm Meg McCaffrey.
Meg blew me a raspberry.
And I claim your service.
Overhead, thunder rumbled in the gray sky. The sound echoed through the city canyons like divine laughter. Whatever was left of my pride turned to ice water and trickled into my socks. I walked right into that, didn't I?
Yep.
Meg bounced up and down in her red sneakers.
We're going to have fun.
With great difficulty, I resisted the urge to weep. Are you sure you're not Artemis in disguise?
I'm that other thing, Meg said, counting my money. The thing you said before. A demigod.
How do you know?
Just do. She gave me a smug smile. And now I have a sidekick god named Lester.
I raised my face to the heavens. Please, Father, I get the point. Please, I can't do this. Zeus did not answer. He was probably too busy recording my humiliation to share on Snapchat.
Cheer up, Meg told me. Who's that guy you wanted to see? The guy on the Upper East Side?
Another demigod, I said. He knows the way to a camp where I might find shelter, guidance, food.
Food?
Meg's ears perked up almost as much as the points on her glasses.
Good food?
Well, normally I just eat ambrosia, but yes, I suppose.
Then that's my first order. We're going to find this guy to take us to the camp place.
I sighed miserably. It was going to be a very long servitude.
As you wish, I said.
Let's find Percy Jackson.
Chapter 3. Used to be gaudy. Now uptown feeling shoddy. Bah, haiku don't rhyme.
As we trudged up Madison Avenue, my mind swirled with questions. Why hadn't Zeus given me a winter coat? Why did Percy Jackson live so far uptown? Why did pedestrians keep staring at me?
I wondered if my divine radiance was starting to return. Perhaps the New Yorkers were awed by my obvious power and unearthly good looks.
Meg McCaffrey set me straight.
You smell, she said. You look like you've just been mugged.
I have just been mugged.
Also enslaved by a small child.
It's not slavery.
She chewed off a piece of her thumb cuticle and spit it out.
It's more like mutual cooperation.
Mutual in the sense that you give orders and I am forced to cooperate?
Yep.
She stopped in front of a storefront window.
See? You look gross.
My reflection stared back at me. Except it was not my reflection. It couldn't be. The face was the same as on Lester Papadopoulos's ID. I looked about 16. My medium-length hair was dark and curly, a style I had rocked in Athenian times, and again in the 1970s. My eyes were blue. My face was pleasing enough in a dorkish way, but it was marred by a swollen eggplant-colored nose, which had dripped a gruesome mustache of blood down my upper lip. Even worse, my cheeks were covered with some sort of rash that looked suspiciously like... My heart climbed into my throat.
Horrors! I cried. Is that acne?
Immortal gods do not get acne. It is one of our inalienable rights. Yet I leaned closer to the glass and saw that my skin was indeed a scarred landscape of whiteheads and pustules. I balled my fists and wailed to the cruel sky.
Zeus, what have I done to deserve this?
Meg tugged at my sleeve.
You're going to get yourself arrested.
What does it matter? I have been made a teenager, and not even one with perfect skin. I bet I don't even have... With a cold sense of dread, I lifted my shirt. My midriff was covered with a floral pattern of bruises from my fall into the dumpster and my subsequent kicking. But even worse, I had flab.
Oh, no. No, no.
I staggered around the sidewalk, hoping the flab would not follow me.
Where are my 8-pack abs? I always have 8-pack abs. I never have love handles. Never in 4,000 years.
Meg made another snorting laugh.
Sheesh, crybaby. You're fine.
I'm fat.
You're average. Average people don't have 8-pack abs. Come on.
I wanted to protest that I was not average, nor a person. But with growing despair, I realized the term now fit me perfectly. On the other side of the storefront window, a security guard's face loomed, scowling at me. I allowed Meg to pull me farther down the street. She skipped along, occasionally stopping to pick up a coin or swing herself around a street lamp. The child seemed unfazed by the cold weather, the dangerous journey ahead, and the fact that I was suffering from acne.
How are you so calm? I demanded.
You are a demigod, walking with the god on your way to a camp to meet others of your kind. Doesn't any of that surprise you?
Eh.
She folded one of my $20 bills into a paper airplane.
I've seen a bunch of weird stuff.
I was tempted to ask what could be weirder than the morning we had just had. I decided I might not be able to stand the stress of knowing.
Where are you from?
I told you. The alley.
No, but your parents. Family, friends. A ripple of discomfort passed over her face. She returned her attention to her $20 airplane.
Not important.
My highly advanced people-reading skills told me she was hiding something, but that was not unusual for demigods. For children blessed with an immortal parent, they were strangely sensitive about their backgrounds. And you've never heard of Camp Half-Blood? Or Camp Jupiter?
Nuh-uh.
She tested the airplane's point on her fingertip.
How much farther to Perry's house?
Percy's. I'm not sure. A few more blocks, I think. That seemed to satisfy Meg. She hopscotched ahead, throwing the cash airplane and retrieving it. She cartwheeled through the intersection at East 72nd Street. Her clothes a flurry of traffic light colors, so bright I worried the drivers might get confused and run her down. Fortunately, New York drivers were used to swerving around oblivious pedestrians. I decided Meg must be a feral demigod. They were rare, but not unheard of. Without any support network, without being discovered by other demigods, or taken in for proper training, she had still managed to survive. But her luck would not last. Monsters usually began hunting down and killing young heroes around the time they turned 13, when their true powers began to manifest. Meg did not have long. She needed to be brought to Camp Half-Blood as much as I did. She was fortunate to have met me. I know that last statement seems obvious. Everyone who meets me is fortunate. But you take my meaning. Had I been my usual omniscient self, I could have gleaned Meg's destiny. I could have looked into her soul and seen all I needed to know about her godly parentage, her powers, her motives and secrets. Now I was blind to such things. I could only be sure she was a demigod because she had successfully claimed my service. Zeus had affirmed her right with a clap of thunder. I felt the binding upon me like a shroud of tightly wrapped banana peels. Whoever Meg McCaffrey was, however she had happened to find me, our fates were now intertwined. It was almost as embarrassing as the acne. We turned east on 82nd Street. By the time we reached 2nd Avenue, the neighborhood started to look familiar. Rows of apartment buildings, hardware shops, convenience stores, and Indian restaurants. I knew that Percy Jackson lived around here somewhere. But my trips across the sky in the Sun Chariot had given me something of a Google Earth orientation. I wasn't used to traveling at street level. Also, in this mortal form, my flawless memory had become flawed. Mortal fears and needs clouded my thoughts. I wanted to eat. I wanted to use the restroom. My body hurt. My clothes stank. I felt as if my brain had been stuffed with wet cotton. Honestly, how do you humans stand it? After a few more blocks, a mixture of sleet and rain began to fall. Meg tried to catch the precipitation on her tongue, which I thought a very ineffective way to get a drink. And of dirty water, no less. I shivered and concentrated on happy thoughts. The Bahamas. The nine muses in perfect harmony. The many horrible punishments I would visit on Cade and Mikey when I became a god again. I still wondered about their boss, and how he had known where I would fall to earth. No mortal could have had that knowledge. In fact, the more I thought about it, I didn't see how even a god other than myself could have foreseen the future so accurately. After all, I had been the god of prophecy, master of the Oracle of Delphi, distributor of the highest quality sneak previews of destiny for millennia. Of course, I had no shortage of enemies. One of the natural consequences of being so awesome is that I attracted envy from all quarters. But I could only think of one adversary who might be able to tell the future.
And if he came looking for me in my weakened state... I tamped down that thought. I had enough to worry about. No point scaring myself to death with what-ifs. We began searching side streets, checking names on apartment mailboxes and intercom panels. The Upper East Side had a surprising number of Jacksons. I found that annoying. After several failed attempts, we turned a corner, and there, parked under a crepe myrtle, sat an older model blue Prius. Its hood bore the unmistakable dents of Pegasus hooves. How was I sure? I know my hoof marks. Also, normal horses do not gallop over Toyotas. Pegasi often do. Aha! I told Meg. We're getting close. Half a block down, I recognized the building. A 5-story brick row house with rusty air conditioner units sagging from the windows. Voila! I cried. At the front steps, Meg stopped, as if she'd run into an invisible barrier. She stared back towards Second Avenue, her dark eyes turbulent. What's wrong? I asked.
Thought I saw them again.
Them? I followed her gaze, but saw nothing unusual. The thugs from the alley?
No. Couple of... She waggled her fingers. Shiny blobs. Saw them back on Park Avenue.
My pulse increased from an andante tempo to a lively allegretto. Shiny blobs? Why didn't you say anything? She tapped the temples of her glasses.
I've seen a lot of weird stuff. Told you that. Mostly things don't bother me, but...
But if they are following us, I said, that would be bad. I scanned the street again. I saw nothing amiss, but I didn't doubt Meg had seen shiny blobs. Many spirits could appear that way. My own father, Zeus, once took the form of a shiny blob to woo a mortal woman. Why the mortal woman found that attractive, I have no idea.
We should get inside, I said. Percy Jackson will help us.
Still, Meg held back. She had shown no fear while pelting muggers with garbage in a blind alley. But now she seemed to be having second thoughts about ringing a doorbell. It occurred to me she might have met demigods before. Perhaps those meetings had not gone well. Meg, I said. I realize that some demigods are not good. I could tell you stories of all the ones I've had to kill or transform into herbs.
Herbs?
But Percy Jackson has always been reliable. You have nothing to fear. Besides, he likes me. I taught him everything he knows. She frowned.
You did?
I found her innocence somewhat charming. So many obvious things she did not know.
Of course. Now let's go up.
I rang the buzzer. A few moments later, the garbled voice of a woman answered.
Yes?
Hello, I said. This is Apollo. Static. The god Apollo, I said, thinking perhaps I should be more specific.
Is Percy home?
More static, followed by two voices in muted conversation. The front door buzzed. I pushed it open. Just before I stepped inside, I caught a flash of movement in the corner of my eye. I peered down the sidewalk, but again saw nothing. Perhaps it had been a reflection, or a whirl of sleet, or perhaps it had been a shiny blob. My scalp tingled with apprehension.
What?
Meg asked.
Probably nothing.
I forced a cheerful tone. I did not want Meg bolting off when we were so close to reaching safety. We were bound together now. I would have to follow her if she ordered me to, and I did not fancy living in the alley with her forever.
Let's go up. We can't keep our hosts waiting.
After all I had done for Percy Jackson, I expected delight upon my arrival.
A tearful welcome, A few burnt offerings and a small festival in my honor would not have been inappropriate. Instead, the young man swung open the apartment door and said,
"Why?"
As usual, I was struck by his resemblance to his father, Poseidon. He had the same sea-green eyes, the same dark, tousled hair, the same handsome features that could shift from humor to anger so easily. However, Percy Jackson did not favor his father's chosen garb of beach shorts and Hawaiian shirts. He was dressed in ragged jeans and a blue hoodie, with the words AHS Swim Team stitched across the front. Meg inched back into the hallway, hiding behind me. I tried for a smile.
"Percy Jackson, my blessings upon you. I am in need of assistance."
Percy's eyes darted from me to Meg.
"Who's your friend?"
"This is Meg McCaffrey," I said, "a demigod who must be taken to Camp Half-Blood. She rescued me from street thugs."
"Rescued?"
Percy scanned my battered face.
"You mean the beat-up teenager look isn't just a disguise? Dude, what happened to you?"
"I may have mentioned the street thugs,
but you're a god."
"About that, I was a god." Percy blinked.
"Was?"
"Also," I said, "I'm fairly certain we're being followed by malicious spirits." If I didn't know how much Percy Jackson adored me, I would have sworn he was about to punch me in my already broken nose. He sighed.
"Maybe you two should come inside."
Chapter 4. Casa de Jackson. No gold-plated throne for guests? Seriously, dude? Another thing I have never understood. How can you mortals live in such tiny places? Where is your pride, your sense of style? The Jackson apartment had no grand throne room, no colonnades, no terraces or banquet halls, or even a thermal bath. It had a tiny living room with an attached kitchen, and a single hallway leading to what I assumed were the bedrooms. The place was on the fifth floor, and while I wasn't so picky as to expect an elevator, I did find it odd there was no landing deck for flying chariots. What did they do when guests from the sky wanted to visit? Standing behind the kitchen counter, making a smoothie, was a strikingly attractive mortal woman of about 40. Her long brown hair had a few gray streaks, but her bright eyes, quick smile, and festive tie-dyed sundress made her look younger. As we entered, she turned off the blender and stepped out from behind the counter.
"Sacred Sybil!" I cried. "Madam, there is something wrong with your midsection."
The woman stopped, mystified, and looked down at her hugely swollen belly. "Well, I'm 7 months pregnant." I wanted to cry for her. Carrying such a weight didn't seem natural. My sister Artemis had experience with midwifery, but I had always found it one area of the healing arts best left to others.
"How can you bear it?" I asked.
My mother Leto suffered through a long pregnancy, but only because Hera cursed her.
"Are you cursed?"
Percy stepped to my side.
Apollo, she's not cursed. And can you not mention Hera?" "You poor woman,"
I shook my head. "A goddess would never allow herself to be so encumbered. She would give birth as soon as she felt like it."
"That must be nice,"
the woman agreed. Percy Jackson coughed.
"So anyway, Mom, this is Apollo and his friend Meg. Guys, this is my mom."
The mother of Jackson smiled and shook our hands.
"Call me Sally."
Her eyes narrowed as she studied my busted nose.
"Dear, that looks painful. What happened?"
I attempted to explain, but I choked on my words. I, the silver-tongued god of poetry, could not bring myself to describe my fall from grace to this kind woman. I understood why Poseidon had been so smitten with her. Sally Jackson possessed just the right combination of compassion, strength, and beauty. She was one of those rare mortal women who could connect spiritually with a god as an equal. To be neither terrified of us nor greedy for what we can offer, but to provide us with true companionship. If I had still been an immortal, I might have flirted with her myself. But I was now a 16-year-old boy. My immortal form was working its way upon my state of mind. I saw Sally Jackson as a mom, a fact that both consternated and embarrassed me. I thought about how long it had been since I had called my own mother. I should probably take her to lunch when I got back to Olympus. "I tell you what," Sally patted my shoulder. "Percy can help you get bandaged and cleaned up." "I can?" asked Percy. Sally gave him the slightest motherly eyebrow raise. "There's a first aid kit in your bathroom, sweetheart. Apollo can take a shower, then wear your extra clothes. You two are about the same size."
"That," Percy said, "is truly depressing."
Sally cupped her hand under Meg's chin. Thankfully, Meg did not bite her. Sally's expression remained gentle and reassuring, but I could see the worry in her eyes. No doubt she was thinking, "Who dressed this poor girl like a traffic light?" "I have some clothes that might fit you, dear," Sally said. "Pre-pregnancy clothes, of course. Let's get you cleaned up, then we'll get you something to eat."
"I like food," Meg muttered.
Sally laughed.
"Well, we have that in common.
Percy, you take Apollo. We'll meet you back here in a while." In short order, I was showered, bandaged, and dressed in Jackson-esque hand-me-downs. Percy left me alone in the bathroom to take care of all this myself, for which I was grateful. He offered me some ambrosia and nectar, food and drink of the gods, to heal my wounds. But I was not sure it would be safe to consume in my immortal state. I didn't want to self-combust, so I stuck with mortal first aid supplies. When I was done, I stared at my battered face in the bathroom mirror. Perhaps teenage angst had permeated the clothes, because I felt more like a sulky high schooler than ever. I thought how unfair it was that I was being punished, how lame my father was, how no one else in the history of time had ever experienced problems like mine. Of course, all that was empirically true. No exaggeration was required. At least my wounds seemed to be healing at a faster rate than a normal mortal's. The swelling in my nose had subsided. My ribs still ached, but I no longer felt as if someone were knitting a sweater inside my chest with hot needles. Accelerated healing was the least Zeus could do for me. I was a god of medicinal arts, after all. Zeus probably just wanted me to get well quickly so I could endure more pain. But I was grateful nonetheless. I wondered if I should start a small fire in Percy Jackson's sink. Perhaps burn some bandages and thanks. But I decided that might strain the Jacksons' hospitality. I examined the black t-shirt Percy had given me. Emblazoned on the front was Led Zeppelin's logo for their record label, Winged Icarus Falling from the Sky. I had no problem with Led Zeppelin. I had inspired all their best songs. But I had a sneaking suspicion that Percy had given me this shirt as a joke. The fall from the sky. Yes, haha. I didn't need to be a god of poetry to spot the metaphor. I decided not to comment on it. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction. I took a deep breath. Then I did my usual motivational speech in the mirror. "You are gorgeous, and people love you." I went out to face the world. Percy was sitting on his bed, staring at the trail of blood droplets I had made across his carpet. "Sorry about that," I said. Percy spread his hands. "Actually, I was thinking about the last time I had a nosebleed." "Oh." The memory came back to me, though hazy and incomplete. Athens, the Acropolis. We gods had battled side by side with Percy Jackson and his comrades. We defeated an army of giants, but a drop of Percy's blood hit the earth and awakened the Earth Mother Gia, who had not been in a good mood. That's when Zeus turned on me. He'd accused me of starting the whole thing, just because Gia had duped one of my progeny, a boy named Octavian, into plunging the Roman and Greek demigod camps into a civil war that almost destroyed human civilization. I ask you, how was that my fault? Regardless, Zeus had held me responsible for Octavian's delusions of grandeur. Zeus seemed to consider egotism a trait the boy had inherited from me, which is ridiculous. I am much too self-aware to be egotistical. What happened to you, man? Percy's voice stirred me from my reverie. The war ended in August. It's January.
It is?
I suppose the wintry weather should have been a clue, but I hadn't given it much thought.
Last I saw you, Percy said. Zeus was chewing you out at the Acropolis. Then bam! He vaporized you. Nobody's seen or heard from you for 6 months.
I tried to recall, but my memories of godhood were getting fuzzier rather than clearer. What had happened in the last 6 months? Had I been in some kind of stasis? Had Zeus taken that long to decide what to do with me? Perhaps there was a reason he'd waited until this moment to hurl me to Earth. Father's voice still rang in my ears.
Your fault. Your punishment.
My shame felt fresh and raw, as if the conversation had just happened, but I could not be sure. After being alive for so many millennia, I had trouble keeping track of time even in the best of circumstances. I would hear a song on Spotify and think, "Oh, that's new." Then I'd realize it was Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 20 in D minor from 200 years ago. Or I'd wonder why Herodotus, the historian, wasn't in my contacts list. Then I'd remember Herodotus didn't have a smartphone, because he had been dead since the Iron Age. It's very irritating how quickly you mortals die. I don't know where I've been, I admitted. I have some memory gaps. Percy winced. I hate memory gaps. Last year I lost an entire semester thanks to Hera. Ah, yes. I couldn't quite remember what Percy Jackson was talking about. During the war with Gia, I had been focused mostly on my own fabulous exploits. But I suppose he and his friends had undergone a few minor hardships. Well, never fear, I said. There are always new opportunities to win fame. That's why I've come to you for help. He gave me that confusing expression again, as if he wanted to kick me, when I was sure he must be struggling to contain his gratitude. Look, man. Would you please refrain from calling me man? I asked. It is a painful reminder that I am a man. Okay, Apollo. I'm fine with driving you and Meg to camp if that's what you want. I never turn away a demigod who needs help. Wonderful. Do you have something besides the Prius? A Maserati, perhaps? I'd settle for a Lamborghini. But, Percy continued, I can't get involved in another big prophecy or whatever. I've made promises. I stared at him, not quite comprehending. Promises? Percy laced his fingers. They were long and nimble. He would have made an excellent musician. I lost most of my junior year because of the war with Gia. I've spent this entire fall playing catch-up with my classes. If I want to go to college with Annabeth next fall, I have to stay out of trouble and get my diploma. Annabeth. I tried to place the name. She's the blonde, scary one. That's her. I promised her specifically that I wouldn't get myself killed while she's gone.
Gone?
Percy waved vaguely toward the north. She's in Boston for a few weeks. Some family emergency. The point is... You're saying you cannot offer me your undivided service to restore me to my throne?
Yeah. He pointed at the bedroom doorway.
Besides, my mom's pregnant. I'm going to have a baby sister. I'd like to be around to get to know her.
Well, I understand that.
I remember when Artemis was born.
Aren't you twins?
I've always regarded her as my little sister.
Percy's mouth twitched.
Anyway, my mom's got that going on, and her first novel is going to be published this spring as well. So I'd like to stay alive long enough to...
Wonderful, I said.
Remind her to burn the proper sacrifices. Calliope is quite touchy when novelists forget to thank her.
Okay, but what I'm saying... I can't go off on another world-stomping quest. I can't do that to my family.
Percy glanced toward his window. On the sill was a potted plant with delicate silver leaves, possibly moonlace. I've already given my mom enough heart attacks for one lifetime. She's just about forgiven me for disappearing last year, but I swore to her and Paul that I wouldn't do anything like that again.
Paul?
My stepdad. He's at a teacher in service today. He's a good guy.
I see.
In truth, I didn't see. I wanted to get back to talking about my problems. I was impatient with Percy for turning the conversation to himself. Sadly, I have found this sort of self-centeredness common among demigods.
You do understand that I must find a way to return to Olympus, I said.
This will probably involve many harrowing trials with a high chance of death. Can you turn down such glory?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can.
Sorry. I pursed my lips. It always disappointed me when mortals put themselves first and failed to see the big picture, the importance of putting me first. But I had to remind myself that this young man had helped me out on many previous occasions. He had earned my goodwill.
I understand, I said with incredible generosity. You will at least escort us to Camp Half-Blood.
That I can do. Percy reached into his hoodie pocket and pulled out a ballpoint pen. For a moment, I thought he wanted my autograph. I can't tell you how often that happens. Then I remembered the pen was the disguised form of his sword, Riptide. He smiled, and some of that old demigod mischief twinkled in his eyes. Let's see if Meg's ready for a field trip.
Chapter 5 Seven-Layer Dip Chocolate Chip Cookies in Blue.
I love this woman.
Sally Jackson was a witch to rival Cersei. She had transformed Meg from a street urchin into a shockingly pretty young girl. Meg's dark, pageboy hair was glossy and brushed. Her round face was scrubbed clean of grime. Her cat-eye glasses had been polished so the rhinestones sparkled. She had evidently insisted on keeping her old red sneakers, but she wore new black leggings and a knee-length frock of shifting green hues. Mrs. Jackson had figured out how to keep Meg's old look, but tweak it to be more complimentary. Meg now had an elfish springtime aura that reminded me very much of a dryad. In fact, a sudden wave of emotion overwhelmed me. I choked back a sob. Meg pouted.
Do I look that bad?
No, no, I managed. It's just... I wanted to say, you remind me of someone. But I didn't dare open that line of conversation. Only two mortals ever had broken my heart. Even after so many centuries, I couldn't think of her. Couldn't say her name without falling into despair.
Don't misunderstand me. I felt no attraction to Meg. I was 16, or 4,000 plus, depending on how you looked at it. She was a very young 12. But the way she appeared now, Meg McCaffrey might have been the daughter of my former love. If my former love had lived long enough to have children. It was too painful. I looked away.
Well, Sally Jackson said with forced cheerfulness, how about I make some lunch while you three talk?
She gave Percy a worried glance, then headed to the kitchen, her hands protectively over her pregnant belly. Meg sat on the edge of the sofa.
Percy, your mom is so normal.
Thanks, I guess.
He picked up a stack of test preparation manuals from the coffee table and chucked them aside.
I see you like to study, I said.
Well done.
Percy snorted.
I hate to study.
I've been guaranteed admission with a full scholarship to New Rome University, but they're still requiring me to pass all my high school courses and score well on the SAT. Can you believe that? Not to mention I have to pass the D-stomp.
The what? Meg asked.
An exam for Roman demigods, I told her. The demigod standard test of mad powers. Percy frowned.
That's what it stands for.
I should know.
I wrote the music and poetry analysis sections.
I will never forgive you for that, Percy said.
Meg swung her feet.
So you're really a demigod? Like me?
Afraid so.
Percy sank into the armchair, leaving me to take the sofa next to Meg. My dad is the godly one, Poseidon. What about your parents? Meg's legs went still. She studied her chewed cuticles, the matching crescent rings glinting on her middle fingers.
Never knew them. Much.
Percy hesitated.
Foster home? Step-parents?
I thought of a certain plant, the Mimosa pudica, which the god Pan created. As soon as its leaves are touched, the plant closes up defensively. Meg seemed to be playing Mimosa, folding inward under Percy's questions. Percy raised his hands.
Sorry, didn't mean to pry.
He gave me an inquisitive look.
So, how did you guys meet?
I told him the story. I may have exaggerated my brave defense against Cade and Mikey, just for narrative effect, you understand. As I finished, Sally Jackson returned. She set down a bowl of tortilla chips and a casserole dish filled with elaborate dip in multicolored strata, like sedimentary rock.
I'll be back with the sandwiches, she said. But I had some leftover seven-layer dip.
Yum.
Percy dug in with a tortilla chip.
She's kind of famous for this, guys.
Sally ruffled his hair.
There's guacamole, sour cream, refried beans, salsa.
Seven layers.
I looked up in wonder.
You knew seven is my sacred number. You invented this for me?
Sally wiped her hands on her apron.
Well, actually, I can't take credit.
You are too modest.
I tried some of the dip. It tasted almost as good as ambrosia nachos.
You will have immortal fame for this, Sally Jackson.
That's sweet.
She pointed to the kitchen.
I'll be right back.
Soon we were plowing through turkey sandwiches, chips and dip, and banana smoothies. Meg ate like a chipmunk, shoving more food in her mouth than she could possibly chew. My belly was full. I had never been so happy. I had a strange desire to fire up an Xbox and play Call of Duty.
Percy,
I said,
your mom is awesome.
I know, right?
He finished his smoothie.
So, back to your story. You have to be Meg's servant now? You guys barely know each other.
Barely is generous, I said.
Nevertheless, yes. My fate is now linked with young McCaffrey.
We are cooperating, Meg said.
She seemed to savor that word. From his pocket, Percy fished his ballpoint pen. He tapped it thoughtfully against his knee.
And this whole turning into a mortal thing, you've done it twice before?
Not by choice, I assured him. The first time we had a little rebellion in Olympus. We tried to overthrow Zeus. Percy winced.
I'm guessing that didn't go well.
I got most of the blame, naturally. Oh, and your father, Poseidon. We were both cast down to Earth as mortals, forced to serve Laomedon, the king of Troy. He was a harsh master. He even refused to pay us for our work. Meg nearly choked on her sandwich.
I have to pay you?
I had a terrifying image of Meg McCaffrey trying to pay me in bottle caps, marbles, and pieces of colored string.
Never fear,
I told her. I won't be presenting you with the bill. But, as I was saying, the second time I became mortal, Zeus got mad because I killed some of his cyclopes. Percy frowned.
Dude, not cool. My brother is a cyclops.
These were wicked cyclopes. They made the lightning bolt that killed one of my sons. Meg bounced on the arm of the sofa.
Percy's brother is a cyclops? That's crazy.
I took a deep breath, trying to find my happy place. At any rate, I was bound to Admetus, the king of Thessaly. He was a kind master. I liked him so much I made all his cows have twin calves.
Can I have baby cows?
Meg asked.
Well, Meg, I said, first you would have to have some mommy cows. You see, guys,
Percy interrupted.
So, just to recap, you have to be Meg's servant for...
some unknown amount of time, I said.
Probably a year.
Possibly more.
And during that time?
I will undoubtedly face many trials and hardships.
Like getting me my cows, Meg said.
I gritted my teeth. What those trials will be, I do not yet know. But if I suffer through them and prove I am worthy, Zeus will forgive me and allow me to become a god again. Percy did not look convinced. Probably because I did not sound convincing. I had to believe my immortal punishment was temporary, as it had been the last two times. Yet Zeus had created a strict rule for baseball and prison sentences. Three strikes, you're out.
I could only hope this would not apply to me.
I need time to get my bearings, I said.
Once we get to Camp Half-Blood, I can consult with Chiron. I can figure out which of my godly powers remain with me in this mortal form.
If any, Percy said. Let's think positive. Percy sat back in his armchair.
Any idea what kind of spirits are following you?
Shiny blobs, Meg said. They were shiny and sort of blobby.
Percy nodded gravely.
Those are the worst kind.
It hardly matters, I said. Whatever they are, we have to flee. Once we reach camp, the magical borders will protect me.
And me?
Meg asked.
Oh, yes. You too.
Percy frowned. Apollo, if you're really mortal, like 100% mortal, can you even get into Camp Half-Blood?
The seven-layer dip began to churn in my stomach.
Please don't say that. Of course I'll get in. I have to.
But you could get hurt in battle now, Percy mused. Then again, maybe monsters would ignore you because you're not important.
Stop! My hands trembled. Being a mortal was traumatic enough. The thought of being barred from camp, of being unimportant... no, that simply could not be.
I'm sure I've retained some powers, I said.
I'm still gorgeous, for instance.
If I could just get rid of this acne and lose some flab,
I must have other abilities.
Percy turned to Meg. What about you? I hear you throw a mean garbage bag. Any other skills we should know about? Summoning lightning? Making toilets explode?
Meg smiled hesitantly.
That's not a power.
Sure it is, Percy said. Some of the best demigods have gotten their start by blowing up toilets.
Meg giggled. I did not like the way she was grinning at Percy.
I didn't want the girl to develop a crush. We might never get out of here. As much as I enjoyed Sally Jackson's cooking, the divine smell of baking cookies was even now wafting from the kitchen. I needed to make haste to camp.
Ahem.
I rubbed my hands.
How soon can we leave?
Percy glanced at the wall clock.
Right now, I guess. If you're being followed, I'd rather have monsters on our trail than sniffing around the apartment.
Good man, I said. Percy gestured with distaste at his test manuals. I just have to be back tonight. Got a lot of studying. The first two times I took the SAT, ugh. If it wasn't for Annabeth helping me out...
Who's that?
Meg asked.
My girlfriend.
Meg frowned. I was glad there were no garbage bags nearby for her to throw.
So take a break, I urged. Your brain will be refreshed after an easy drive to Long Island.
Huh, Percy said.
There's a lazy kind of logic to that.
Okay, let's do it. He rose just as Sally Jackson walked in with a plate of fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies. For some reason, the cookies were blue, but they smelled heavenly. And I should know. I'm from heaven.
Mom, don't freak, Percy said.
Sally sighed.
I hate it when you say that.
I'm just going to take these two to camp. That's all. I'll be right back.
I think I've heard that before. I promise.
Sally looked at me, then Meg. Her expression softened, her innate kindness perhaps overweighing her concern.
All right.
Be careful. It was lovely meeting you both.
Please try not to die.
Percy kissed her on the cheek. He reached for the cookies, but she moved the plate away.
Oh, no, she said. Apollo and Meg can have one. But I'm keeping the rest hostage until you're back safely. And hurry, dear. It would be a shame if Paul ate them all when he gets home.
Percy's expression turned grim. He faced us.
You hear that, guys? A batch of cookies is depending on me. If you get me killed on the way to camp, I am gonna be ticked off.
Chapter 6. Aquaman driving. Couldn't possibly be worse. Oh, wait. Now it is. Much to my disappointment, the Jacksons did not have a spare bow or quiver to lend me.
I suck at archery, Percy explained.
Yes, but I don't, I said.
This is why you should always plan for my needs.
Sally lent Meg and me some proper winter fleece jackets, however. Mine was blue, with the word Blowfiss written inside the neckline. Perhaps that was an arcane ward against evil spirits. Hecate would have known. Sorcery really wasn't my thing. Once we reached the Prius, Meg called Shotgun, which was yet another example of my unfair existence. Gods do not ride in the back. I again suggested following them in a Maserati or a Lamborghini, but Percy admitted he had neither. The Prius was the only car his family owned. I mean, wow. Just wow. Sitting in the back seat, I quickly became carsick. I was used to driving my Sun Chariot across the sky, where every lane was the fast lane. I was not used to the Long Island Expressway. Believe me, even at midday, in the middle of January, there is nothing express about your expressways. Percy braked and lurched forward. I sorely wished I could launch a fireball in front of us and melt cars to make way for our clearly more important journey.
Doesn't your Prius have flamethrowers? I demanded.
Lasers. At least some Hephaestian bumper blades. What sort of cheap economy vehicle is this? Percy glanced in the rearview mirror. You have rides like that on Mount Olympus?
We don't have traffic jams, I said. That I can promise you.
Meg tugged at her crescent moon rings. Again, I wondered if she had some connection to Artemis. The moon was my sister's symbol. Perhaps Artemis had sent Meg to look after me?
Yet that didn't seem right. Artemis had trouble sharing anything with me. Demigods, arrows, nations, birthday parties. It's a twin thing. Also, Meg McCaffrey did not strike me as one of my sister's followers. Meg had another sort of aura. One I would have been able to recognize easily if I were a god. But no. I had to rely on mortal intuition, which was like trying to pick up sewing needles while wearing oven mitts. Meg turned and gazed out the rear windshield, probably checking for any shiny blobs pursuing us.
At least we're not being...
Don't say it, Percy warned. Meg huffed.
You don't know what I was going to...
You were going to say, at least we're not being followed, Percy said. That'll jinx us. Immediately we'll notice that we are being followed, then we'll end up in a big battle that totals my family car and probably destroys the whole freeway. Then we'll have to run all the way to camp.
Meg's eyes widened. You can tell the future?
Don't need to. Percy changed lanes to one that was crawling slightly less slowly. I've just done this a lot. Besides, he shot me an accusing look, nobody can tell the future anymore. The oracle isn't working.
What oracle? Meg asked.
Neither of us answered. For a moment, I was too stunned to speak. And believe me, I have to be very stunned for that to happen.
It still isn't working?
I said in a small voice.
You didn't know?
Percy asked. I mean, sure, you've been out of it for 6 months, but this happened on your watch. That was unjust. I had been busy hiding from Zeus's wrath at the time, which was a perfectly legitimate excuse. How was I to know that Gia would take advantage of the chaos of war and raise my oldest, greatest enemy from the depths of Tartarus so he could take possession of his old lair in the cave of Delphi and cut off the source of my prophetic power? Oh, yes. I hear you critics out there. You're the god of prophecy, Apollo. How could you not know that would happen? The next sound you hear will be me blowing you a giant Meg McCaffrey-quality raspberry. I swallowed back the taste of fear and seven-layer dip. I assumed. I hoped this would be taken care of by now. You mean by demigods? Percy said. Going on a big quest to reclaim the Oracle of Delphi?
Exactly.
I knew Percy would understand. I suppose Chiron just forgot. I'll remind him when we get to camp. And he can dispatch some of you talented fodder. I mean, heroes.
Well, here's the thing, Percy said. To go on a quest, we need a prophecy, right? Those are the rules. If there's no oracle, there are no prophecies. So we're stuck in a
catch 88, I sighed. Meg threw a piece of lint at me.
It's a catch 22.
No, I explained patiently. This is a catch 88, which is four times as bad. I felt as if I were floating in a warm bath and someone had pulled out the stopper. The water swirled around me, tugging me downward. Soon I would be left shivering and exposed, or else I would be sucked down the drain into the sewers of hopelessness. Don't laugh. That's a perfectly fine metaphor. Also, when you're a god, you can get sucked down a drain quite easily, if you're caught off guard and relaxed, and you happen to change form at the wrong moment. Once I woke up in a sewage treatment facility in Biloxi, but that's another story. I was beginning to see what was in store for me during my mortal sojourn. The oracle was held by hostile forces. My adversary lay coiled and waiting, growing stronger every day on the magical fumes of the Delphic caverns. And I was a weak mortal, bound to an untrained demigod who threw garbage and chewed her cuticles. No. Zeus could not possibly expect me to fix this. Not in my present condition. And yet, someone had sent those thugs to intercept me in the alley. Someone had known where I would land. Nobody can tell the future anymore, Percy had said.
but that wasn't quite true.
Hey, you two.
Meg hit us both with pieces of lint. Where was she finding this lint? I realized I'd been ignoring her. It had felt good while it lasted. Yes, sorry, Meg, I said. You see, the Oracle of Delphi is an ancient...
I don't care about that, she said. There are three shiny blobs now.
What? Percy asked. She pointed behind us.
Look!
Weaving through the traffic, closing in on us rapidly, were three glittery, vaguely humanoid apparitions, like billowing plumes from smoke grenades touched by King Midas.
Just once I'd like an easy commute, Percy grumbled.
Everybody, hold on. We're going cross-country. Percy's definition of cross-country was different from mine. I envisioned crossing an actual countryside. Instead, Percy shot down the nearest exit ramp, wove across the parking lot of a shopping mall, then blasted through the drive-thru of a Mexican restaurant, without even ordering anything. We swerved into an industrial area of dilapidated warehouses, the smoking apparitions still closing in behind us. My knuckles turned white on my seatbelt's shoulder strap.
Is your plan to avoid a fight by dying in a traffic accident?
I demanded.
Ha ha!
Percy yanked the wheel to the right. We sped north, the warehouses giving way to a hodgepodge of apartment buildings and abandoned strip malls. I'm getting us to the beach. I fight better near water.
Because Poseidon?
Meg asked, steadying herself against the door handle. Yep, Percy agreed. That pretty much describes my entire life. Because Poseidon. Meg bounced up and down with excitement, which seemed pointless to me, since we were already bouncing quite a lot.
You're gonna be like Aquaman? She asked. Get the fish to fight for you?
Thanks, Percy said. I haven't heard enough Aquaman jokes for one lifetime.
I wasn't joking, Meg protested.
I glanced out the rear window. The three glittering plumes were still gaining. One of them passed through a middle-aged man crossing the street. The mortal pedestrian instantly collapsed.
Ah, I know these spirits, I cried. They are...
My brain clouded over.
What? Percy demanded. They are what?
I've forgotten. I hate being mortal. 4,000 years of knowledge, the secrets of the universe, a sea of wisdom, lost... because I can't contain it all in this teacup of a head.
Hold on!
Percy flew through a railroad crossing, and the Prius went airborne. Meg yelped as her head hit the ceiling. Then she began giggling uncontrollably. The landscape opened into actual countryside. Fallow fields, dormant vineyards, orchards of bare fruit trees.
Just another mile or so to the beach, Percy said.
Plus, we're almost to the western edge of camp.
We can do it. We can do it!
Actually, we couldn't. One of the shiny smoke clouds pulled a dirty trick, pluming from the pavement directly in front of us. Instinctively, Percy swerved. The Prius went off the road, straight through a barbed wire fence and into an orchard. Percy managed to avoid hitting any of the trees, but the car skidded in the icy mud and wedged itself between two trunks. Miraculously, the airbags did not deploy. Percy popped his seatbelt.
You guys okay?
Meg shoved against her passenger side door.
Won't open! Get me out of here!
Percy tried his own door. It was firmly jammed against the side of a peach tree.
Back here, I said. Climb over!
I kicked my door open and staggered out, my legs feeling like worn shock absorbers. The three smoky figures had stopped at the edge of the orchard. Now they advanced slowly, taking on solid shapes. They grew arms and legs. Their faces formed eyes and wide, hungry mouths.
I knew instinctively that I had dealt with these spirits before. I couldn't remember what they were, but I had dispelled them many times, swatting them into oblivion with no more effort than I would a swarm of gnats. Unfortunately, I wasn't a god now. I was a panicky 16-year-old. My palms sweated. My teeth chattered. My only coherent thought was, "Yikes!" Percy and Meg struggled to get out of the Prius. They needed time, which meant I had to run interference.
"Stop!" I bellowed at the spirits. "I am the god Apollo!"
To my pleasant surprise, the three spirits stopped. They hovered in place about 40 feet away. I heard Meg grunt as she tumbled out of the back seat. Percy scrambled after her. I advanced toward the spirits, the frosty mud crunching under my shoes. My breath steamed in the cold air. I raised my hand in an ancient three-fingered gesture for warding off evil.
"Leave us or be destroyed,"
I told the spirits.
"Blowfish!"
The smoky shapes trembled. My hopes lifted. I waited for them to dissipate or flee in terror. Instead, they solidified into ghoulish corpses with yellow eyes. Their clothes were tattered rags, their limbs covered with gaping wounds and running sores. Oh dear. My Adam's apple dropped into my chest like a billiard ball. I remember now. Percy and Meg stepped to either side of me. With a metallic chink, Percy's pen grew into a blade of glowing celestial bronze. "Remember what?" he asked. "How to kill these things?" "No," I said. "I remember what they are. Nosoi. Plague spirits. Also, they can't be killed." Chapter 7. Tag with Plague Spirits. You're it, and you're infectious. Have fun with that. LOL.
Nosoi?
Percy planted his feet in a fighting stance. "You know, I keep thinking, I have now killed every single thing in Greek mythology, but the list never seems to end."
"You haven't killed me yet," I noted.
"Don't tempt me." The three Nosoi shuffled forward. Their cadaverous mouths gaped. Their tongues lolled. Their eyes glistened with a film of yellow mucus. "These creatures are not myths," I said. "Of course, most things in those old myths are not myths. Except for that story about how I flayed the satyr Marcius alive. That was a total lie."
Percy glanced at me. "You did what?"
"Guys?" Meg picked up a dead tree branch.
"Could we talk about that later?"
The middle plague spirit spoke.
"Apollo."
His voice gurgled like a seal with bronchitis.
"We have come to..."
"Let me stop you right there." I crossed my arms and feigned arrogant indifference. Difficult for me, but I managed. "You've come to take your revenge on me, eh?" I looked at my demigod friends. "You see, Nosoi are the spirits of disease. Once I was born, spreading illnesses became part of my job. I use plague arrows to strike down naughty populations with smallpox, athlete's foot, that sort of thing."
"Gross," Meg said.
"Somebody's gotta do it," I said.
"Better a god regulated by the Council of Olympus, and with the proper health permits, than a horde of uncontrolled spirits like these." The spirit on the left gurgled.
"We're trying to have a moment here. Stop interrupting. We wish to be free. Uncontrolled."
"Yes, I know. You'll destroy me, then you'll spread every known malady across the world. You've been wanting to do that ever since Pandora let you out of that jar.
But you can't. I will strike you down." Perhaps you are wondering how I could act so confident and calm. In fact,
I was terrified. My 16-year-old mortal instincts were screaming, "Run!" My knees were knocking together, and my right eye had developed a nasty twitch. But the secret to dealing with plague spirits was to keep talking, so as to appear in charge and unafraid. I trusted that this would allow my demigod companions time to come up with a clever plan to save me. I certainly hoped Meg and Percy were working on such a plan. The spirit on the right bared his rotten teeth.
"What will you strike us down with? Where is your bow?"
"It appears to be missing," I agreed. "But is it really? What if it's cleverly hidden under this Led Zeppelin t-shirt, and I'm about to whip it out and shoot you all?" The Nosoi shuffled nervously.
"You lie," said the one in the middle.
Percy cleared his throat.
Hey, Apollo?
Finally, I thought. "I know what you're going to say," I told him. "You and Meg have come up with a clever plan to hold off these spirits while I run away to camp. I hate to see you sacrifice yourselves, but..."
"That's not what I was going to say."
Percy raised his blade.
"I was going to ask what happens if I just slice and dice these mouth breathers with celestial bronze."
The middle spirit chortled, his yellow eyes gleaming.
"A sword is such a small weapon. It does not have the poetry of a good epidemic."
"Stop right there," I said. "You can't claim both my plagues and my poetry."
"You are right," said the spirit. "Enough words."
The three corpses shambled forward. I thrust out my arms, hoping to blast them to dust. Nothing happened.
"This is insufferable," I complained. "How do demigods do it without an auto-wind power?"
Meg jabbed her tree branch into the nearest spirit's chest. The branch stuck. Glittering smoke began swirling down the length of the wood.
"Let go," I warned. "Don't let the Nosoi touch you."
Meg released the branch and scampered away. Meanwhile, Percy Jackson charged into battle. He swung his sword, dodging the spirit's attempts to snare him. But his efforts were futile. Whenever his blade connected with the Nosoi, their bodies simply dissolved into glittery mist, then re-solidified. A spirit lunged to grab him. From the ground, Meg scooped up a frozen black peach and threw it with such force it embedded itself in the spirit's forehead, knocking him down.
"We gotta run," Meg decided.
"Yeah," Percy backtracked toward us. "I like that idea." I knew running would not help. If it were possible to run from disease spirits, the medieval Europeans would have put on their track shoes and escaped the Black Death. And, FYI, the Black Death was not my fault. I took one century off to lie around the beach in Cabo, and came back and found that the Nosoi had gotten loose, and a third of the continent was dead. Gods, I was so irritated. But I was too terrified to argue. Meg and Percy sprinted off through the orchard, and I followed. Percy pointed to a line of hills about a mile ahead.
"That's the western border of camp. If we can just get there..."
We passed an irrigation tank on a tractor trailer. With a casual flick of his hand, Percy caused the side of the tank to rupture. A wall of water crashed into the three Nosoi behind us.
"That was good,"
Meg grinned, skipping along in her new green dress.
"We're going to make it."
No, I thought. We're not. My chest ached. Each breath was a ragged wheeze. I resented that these two demigods could carry on a conversation while running for their lives, while I, the immortal Apollo, was reduced to gasping like a catfish.
"We can't," I gulped. "They'll just..."
Before I could finish, three glittering pillars of smoke plumed from the ground in front of us. Two of the Nosoi solidified into cadavers, one with a peach for a third eye, the other with a tree branch sticking out of his chest. The third spirit,
Well, Percy didn't see it in time. He ran straight into the plume of smoke.
"Don't breathe!"
I warned him.
Percy's eyes bugged out as if to say, "Seriously?"
He fell to his knees, clawing at his throat. As a son of Poseidon, he could probably breathe underwater, but holding one's breath for an indeterminate amount of time was a different matter altogether. Meg picked up another withered peach from the field, but it would offer her little defense against the forces of darkness. I tried to figure out how to help Percy, because I am all about helping, but the branch impaled Knossos charged at me. I turned and fled, running face first into a tree. I'd like to tell you that was part of my plan, but even I, with all my poetic skill, cannot put a positive spin on it. I found myself flat on my back, spots dancing in my eyes, the cadaverous visage of the plague spirit looming over me.
"Which fatal illness shall I use to kill the great Apollo?"
the spirit gurgled.
"Anthrax, perhaps Ebola."
"Hangnails," I suggested, trying to squirm away from my tormentor. "I live in fear of hangnails."
"I have the answer,"
the spirit cried, rudely ignoring me.
"Let's try this."
He dissolved into smoke and settled over me like a glittering blanket. Chapter 8. Peaches in combat. I am hanging it up now. My brain exploded. I will not say my life passed before my eyes. I wish it had. That would have taken several months, giving me time to figure out an escape plan. Instead, my regrets passed before my eyes. Despite being a gloriously perfect being, I do have a few regrets. I remembered that day at Abbey Road Studios, when my envy led me to set rancor in the hearts of John and Paul and break up the Beatles. I remembered Achilles falling on the plains of Troy, cut down by an unworthy archer because of my wrath. I saw Hyacinthus, his bronze shoulders and dark ringlets gleaming in the sunlight. Standing on the sideline of the discus field, he gave me a brilliant smile. "Even you can't throw that far," he teased. "Watch me," I said. I threw the discus, then stared in horror as a gust of wind made it veer inexplicably toward Hyacinthus's handsome face. And of course I saw her, the other love of my life, her fair skin transforming into bark, her hair sprouting green leaves, her eyes hardening into rivulets of sap. Those memories brought back so much pain. You might think I would welcome the glittering plague mist descending over me. Yet my new mortal self rebelled. I was too young to die. I hadn't even had my first kiss. Yes, my godly catalog of exes was filled with more beautiful people than a Kardashian party guest list. But none of that seemed real to me. If I'm being totally honest, I have to confess something else. All gods fear death, even when we are not encased in mortal forms. That may seem silly. We are immortal. But as you've seen, immortality can be taken away. In my case, 3 stinking times. Gods know about fading. They know about being forgotten over the centuries. The idea of ceasing to exist altogether terrifies us. In fact, well, Zeus would not like me sharing this information, and if you tell anyone, I will deny I ever said it. But the truth is, we gods are a little in awe of you mortals. You spend your whole lives knowing you will die. No matter how many friends and relatives you have, your puny existence will quickly be forgotten. How do you cope with it? Why are you not running around constantly screaming and pulling your hair out? Your bravery, I must admit, is quite admirable. No, where was I? Right,
I was dying.
I rolled around in the mud, holding my breath. I tried to brush off the disease cloud, but it was not as easy as swatting a fly or an uppity mortal. I caught a glimpse of Meg, playing a deadly game of tag with the third Gnosos, trying to keep a peach tree between herself and the spirit. She yelled something to me, but her voice seemed tinny and far away. Somewhere to my left, the ground shook. A miniature geyser erupted from the field. Percy crawled toward it desperately. He thrust his face in the water, washing away the smoke. My eyesight began to dim. Percy struggled to his feet. He ripped out the source of the geyser, an irrigation pipe, and turned the water on me. Normally, I do not like being doused. Every time I go camping with Artemis,